Welcome to Family Talk with your host, psychologist and author, Dr. James Dobson, along with Ryan Dobson and Lou Ann Crane.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Family Talk. Lou Ann and Dad, I cannot remember a program that went by faster than yesterday's. I mean, when you started saying we were going to run out of time, I thought, no, we've just started. And I looked up at the clock. We were at the end. Dr. Richard Land is so fascinating and articulate. I mean, I could listen to him all day long and it would just fly by.
And I was thinking the same thing you were. I was thinking, how do I stop this conversation?
Well, and he is such a keen observer of the culture right now. He has so many insights, especially into this recent midterm election and what that all means for our country and our families.
Well, that is precisely the reason I invited Dr. Land to be with us last time and why I'm so pleased that he is able to join us again for another day. Because I really do want to do a little more analyzing of the election with him. Most of our listeners are probably quite familiar with Dr. Land. He has served as the president of the Southern Baptist Convention's Ethics and Religious Liberty Commission for 22 years. He hosts three nationally syndicated radio programs, For Faith and Family, For Faith and Family's Insight, and Richard Land Live. He is also the author of a very insightful book called The Divided States of America, What Liberals and Conservatives Are Missing in the God and Country Shouting Match. We talked about that last time and probably we'll touch on it again today. It's being re-released in January with a new introduction, Dr. Land, and thank you for coming back to be with us today. It's such a pleasure to have you here. You flew here from Tennessee.
I did. And, it's an honor. I feel like Timothy in the presence of Paul.
Oh, boy. That's an overstatement if I ever heard one. I want to talk to you about the elections that occurred on November the 2nd. I said at the top of the program last time that we've heard commentators and columnists and cable news people and talk show people talk about what the results really mean. I would like your take on it, not with regard only to what it means right now, but what are the implications for the future?
Well, the implications are huge. This was basically a lawful rebellion against the administration. As of present, the Republicans have gained 62 seats in the House. Mm. That's the largest shift from one party to another since the 1938 election. So that's nearly two-thirds of a century. the 19 state legislatures switched. Now, that is enormous.
That's where the power is.
Well, especially in a census. See, this is 2010, so we've had a census. So every state is going to have to redistrict all of its congressional districts. And, you know, right now I live in a state where the 7th congressional district where I live looks like somebody spilled ink on the state of Tennessee. I mean, obviously the Democratic legislature tried to get every Republican they could find in Tennessee in one district. This district goes from the western suburbs of Memphis all the way to the southern suburbs of Nashville. I mean, it's a very strange-looking district.
And the reason they do that is because they will concede the results
in certain districts
in order to win a bunch of states and areas and districts.
The political scientists will tell you that the Republicans elected more state legislators than they've had since 1928. That means that it probably means a structural difference of about 20 seats in the House of Representatives, which means that it's almost impossible for the Democrats to regain control of the House until after the 2020 census. Also, if you're the governor of a state, it makes it much easier for a presidential candidate to win that state if he's in your party because you have people on the ground that can organize events, that can organize get-out-the-vote efforts. And I think that probably if you look at the structure of the new Senate, the Republicans probably have de facto control of the Senate because there are 24 Democrats up for re-election in 2012, and they're in red states, which means that if conservative legislation comes over from the House, if they vote against it, then they're not going to be re-elected to the Senate. So and this was done by conservative Christians. We can prove this. The exit polling shows 29% of all the people who voted said that they were evangelical Christians. 32% said that they were conservative, pro-life, pro-family Christians. So that would include mainline Protestants and Catholics. And they voted 78% for the Republican candidate. Because of the Republicans? No. Because they were pro-life and pro-family.
And yeah, I said recently, this is not a victory for Republicans.
No.
This is an opportunity.
This is the last chance.
Yeah.
In my opinion, this is the last chance for Republicans to get it right. And in fact, I sent these results to several people that interviewed me at Newsweek and Time and MSNBC, and I said, we're back. The values voters,
believed it
the values voters are back.
In 2008.
It's a sea change.
What impact do you think the health care bill played?
Huge. I think it was huge. The health care bill was a perfect storm for the Democrats. It reunited the disunited conservatives. You got different kinds of conservatives. You got social conservatives like us who were horrified by the pro-death provisions in the bill. I mean, you know, people say, well, it doesn't have rationing. Really? You cut $500 billion out of Medicare? That means people who are on Medicare are going to have to wait longer to see a doctor. They're going to have to wait longer between the time they see the doctor and they get treatment. That's a death sentence. In that age group, that's a death sentence.
Did you see the comment by Paul Krugman in the New York Times just a couple of weeks ago, who said death panels are one of the solutions to our financial woes and Social Security and so on?
The president's chief health care advisor, Ezekiel Emanuel, said the same thing. He said you should rapidly lose your rights to access to health care system after you've reached your 60th birthday. This is exactly what Berwick wants to do. Berwick says he has a romantic love affair with the British system. Berwick is now in charge of Medicare. The British system, they have a formula they use on how much treatment you get, and the chief component of it is your age. If you're over 59 and a half, you can't get bypass surgery. You can't get dialysis. You can't get heart transplants. It's not considered cost effective. Well, that's one way to save Social Security. You kill all the people before they get there. I'm absolutely confident in saying this. 99% of the people who are hearing me right now over the radio, if Obamacare is not rescinded, you will live a shorter life. And it'll be more filled with pain and suffering before you die, because they're not going to give you hip transplants, they're not going to give you knee transplants, and they're not going to give you other treatments as you go into old age.
Ryan, you spoke the other day and mentioned my mother. My mother had Parkinson's disease, and for 5 years she didn't know anything. Mm-hmm. And yet she was treated with dignity and respect.
That's right.
I mean, thanks to the Lord's grace, we had the resources, she had the resources to have somebody take care of her.
But, well, Obama's grandmother basically raised him. I mean, you know, this myth they have about his upbringing is ludicrous. He spent most of his childhood and adolescence with his grandparents in Honolulu. His grandmother was the vice president of a bank. His grandfather owned a construction company. He went to the most exclusive prep school in the Hawaiian Islands, the Panaho School. And then he went to Occidental College and to Columbia University. He was not poor. But he said about his own grandmother, who raised him. He said, well, perhaps it wasn't the wisest use of resources to let her have a hip transplant after she was diagnosed with terminal cancer. So I guess she could hobble around in pain while she was dying of cancer.
Oh, my goodness. You were just mentioning earlier, Dad, about Myrna, your mom, and going to visit her. That's the story I was telling about life is valuable in all stages.
Absolutely.
And when she was, I mean, maybe 5 or 6 years before she passed away, she stopped remembering who I was and didn't respond to anybody for a long time. And I was talking with Danae about this.
Sister?
That's right. A few weeks ago. And I said, the most amazing part of you visiting her every single week is you weren't doing it to teach a lesson. You weren't doing that to make a point. You were living word and deed. Mm-hmm. That's your life. All life is valuable in any stage. That's for me. That was profound.
Yeah, you know, it's. I was debating a liberal rabbi a couple of years ago, and he said, "Look, Richard, how come you conservatives are so fixated on pelvic politics, as if abortion was about sex? It's not. Abortion is about as big a mega ethical issue as any human society can ask itself. Who is a human being? When does a human being become a human being? And what protections does a civilized society owe to a human being? And when do they owe it? And are there ever any circumstances under which those can be terminated, either at the beginning of life or the end of life? I mean, I can't think of a more basic issue. And then the marriage issue is about the fundamental building block of human society in which the next generation is raised. That's why every society in human history, no matter how primitive, has severely regulated marriage. And who can get married to whom and under what circumstances? I was talking about same-sex marriage at Harvard about 3 years ago, and this I must have been having a good day. This co-ed said, well, you seem like a nice enough guy. Why would you want to interfere in the personal, private relationship of two people? And I said, how did you ever get the idea that marriage was a personal, private relationship? You got to get a license from the state to do it. It is a social and a civic institution that has enormous impact on the future of society. And to me, the amazing thing was not that she disagreed with me. It was clear that no one in that room had ever heard that argument.
What do you think the judges are going to do to that institution?
I think that unless we put a really good scare into them, they are going to validate the horrendous decision in California. And by a really good scare.
We gave them a really good scare in Iowa.
Iowa was a good start, and they heard it. But what we now need to do is we need to build strong support for a federal marriage amendment in the Congress. I think the only way – let's talk turkey here. The only way that Justice Kennedy is not going to vote in favor of same-sex marriage, the man who wrote the Romer decision in Colorado
– yes.
is if he believes the alternative is a marriage amendment.
I'll tell you, Richard, the Republicans are going to have to prove to me that they've got the guts to handle that because they have not in the past.
No, I agree
with
you. And
I did three programs a couple of weeks ago where I – it was actually a recorded speech from 1998 where the Republicans had what they needed to pass a marriage amendment, and they didn't have the guts to even discuss it.
Well, I know. I talked to some of those senators, and several of them said, if a federal court ever nullifies a state prohibition, then we will vote for a marriage amendment. We're going to remind them of that because that has now happened in California. The people of California constitutionally prohibited same-sex marriage, and the federal court overruled the California Constitution. So the only remedy left to us now is a federal constitutional amendment, which basically says to the Supreme Court, sit down, shut up.
Well, we're going to have to really let our representatives know how we feel about that. Mm-hmm. I just remember being so disgusted during the discussions of a federal marriage amendment or the second go-around, which was called a marriage protection amendment, where so many Republican senators said, we don't need it. It's unnecessary. There's no crisis. We all saw it was coming. And yet right now, 31 states have considered the definition of marriage for their constitutions, and all 31 have said marriage is between a man and a woman. Explain to people what happened in Iowa.
Well, in Iowa, they have what seems to me to be a very sensible law, and I'm ready to start a discussion that we ought to have it at the federal level. And that is every 6 years, judges have a retention vote. And the judge's name is on the ballot, and you either say, yes, I want to keep this judge, or no, I don't want to keep this judge. There's no opponent. It's just yes or no. Well, three, they're up. The Iowa Supreme Court, in its collective lack of wisdom, sought to impose upon the people of Iowa same-sex marriage, even though the people of Iowa had voted against it rather significant margins. Three of the Supreme Court justices that voted for it were up for retention elections, including the Chief Justice. They all were turned out of office. They were all kicked off the court. And it's my belief that in two more years, another three will be kicked off the court. And don't think judges around the country didn't see those returns.
Well, they're yelling like stuck pigs.
But I'm ready to do this. I'm ready to put an amendment to the Constitution that says that every 6 years – three of the nine Supreme Court, you know, every 6 years on a rotating basis, we'll have three Supreme Court justices. The name will be on the ballot nationwide, and you get to vote. I want to keep Justice Scalia or I don't want to keep Justice Scalia. And the same thing with federal district court judges. In the district where they serve, you get to vote whether you're going to keep them or not.
Well, to do that, you'd have to have a constitutional amendment.
I'm ready to start.
Well, I'm going to tell you,
judges aren't all that popular.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What I'm reading in the paper with all these legal opinions that are being published is that we've lost the independent judiciary. You know, whoever thought up the idea that judges should be able to impose their will on a free society.
Mm-hmm. What we've lost.
And the people have no way to limit them at all.
What we've lost is government of the people, by the people, and for the people, to government of the judges, by the judges, and for the judges. And since the judges won't be umpires, which is what they're supposed to be, they're supposed to be umpires. They're supposed to not be adjudicating from the bench what they believe, but they ought to be adjudicating what the law is. I always remember wonderfully Justice Roberts' statement when he was questioned by Chuck Schumer, and Chuck Schumer said, "Well, I just want to know, Judge Roberts, are you going to be for the big guy or the little guy?" And Judge Roberts said, "Senator, my client's the Constitution. If the Constitution says the big guy should win, then the big guy's going to win. If the Constitution says the little guy should win, the little guy's going to win. I'm an umpire. I'm there to call balls and strikes, not redefine the strike zone."
Mm-hmm. Dr. Land, you've talked about churches where some of them are saying, you know, these are divisive times and we want to reach out to everybody. So in order to not offend anyone, we're just going to focus on the gospel. We're not going to mention politics. Mm-hmm. To me, that's a misnomer. But what do you say to people like that?
Well, what I say to them is, first of all, the Great Commission says to go into all the world and preach the gospel and make disciples, teaching them all things whatsoever I commanded you. Now, that's a pretty inclusive statement, and it would certainly include what the Bible has to say about life, what the Bible has to say about abortion, what the Bible has to say about marriage. And I'm just old enough to remember pastors who said, "Well, I don't want to preach about integration. I don't want to preach about racial injustice because that's divisive, and we're just going to preach the gospel." And so they didn't confront segregation, and they didn't confront racism. Mm-hmm. And it's my humble opinion that many of those pastors who are saying this today won't be remembered any more fondly than the segregationists have been.
Hmm. Let me turn a corner. We've heard a lot about the gender gap, men and women voting differently. Mm-hmm. But you've talked about something called a marriage gap. What is it?
Well, it is true there is a gender gap, but there's a bigger marriage gap. Married people, men and women, voted overwhelmingly Republican compared to single men and single women. And parents voted overwhelmingly. Married couples with children and moms and dads who were divorced, even if they were divorced, but if they had children, they voted in significantly higher numbers for the Republicans. Single women voted significantly for the Democrats. Single men voted even more significantly for the Democrats. So, you know, it's a very interesting phenomenon. This goes back to what we saw in the 2004 election, where married couples with children voted 59% for Bush, and single women voted 62% for Kerry, and single men voted 64% for Kerry. People who are married, people who have children, tend to be more pro-life, more pro-family, obviously. And they are much more likely to attend worship services on a regular basis. We saw in the 2004 election the same thing we saw in this election. People who went to worship services more than once a week voted significantly for the Republicans. People who seldom or never went to church voted significantly for the Democrats.
Hmm. But again, Dr. Land, I like what you say. This really is not a Republican-Democrat issue. I mean, you've said that we should not be endorsing parties. We should be looking for parties that endorse us, endorse our convictions and our values. I think that just that makes it crystal clear to me.
See, our loyalty doesn't belong to any party. Mm-hmm. I mean, my parents canceled out each other's vote in every election. My dad was from Texas. My mother was from Boston. And they were both wrong because my parents didn't disagree on any core issues. But they were voting the family loyalty of their family and their region of the country. Our loyalty doesn't belong to our family. It doesn't belong to any party, which is parties are human institutions that are there to, they'll exploit you if you let them. They will take advantage of you if you let them. We should be looking for candidates who endorse us and endorse our values and endorse our beliefs. I'll never forget, I was there in Dallas at the Reunion Arena when President Reagan had just been nominated, and he came to that wonderful meeting of 18,000 pro-life and pro-family activists. It was sort of the coming out party for the pro-family, pro-life movement. And he got up, he had a khaki suit on and looked so devastatingly debonair, and he said, "Well, I know that you can't endorse me, but I'm here to endorse you."
How interesting those days were. They called them the new beginning.
You know, Ronald Reagan, the longer it's been since he's been president, the greater we realize he was.
Mm-hmm. Were you at his inauguration?
I was not.
I was, and it was one of the great thrills of my life. We only have time, really, for one other question, and we're talking to Dr. Richard Land. Let's go back to something we touched on in the first program, having to do with your book, The Divided States of America. And you said that you had another title that you wanted to be on this book, and the publisher wouldn't let it. Yeah. Wouldn't let you, and he put this title on it, which is not bad. Yours is better.
Well, I think so.
What were you aiming at?
Well, mine was what does God have to do with America? I believe that that God has a unique relationship with this country. That he's particularly interested, as Benjamin Franklin said, he's particularly interested in the United States of America. And I think that that builds certain responsibilities to us as Americans. That does not mean God will not judge us. God judged Israel, and they were his chosen nation. If God will judge Israel, he'll judge us. But I believe that God wants to use us and has used us in the past, and that when we are our best selves, we understand that it's God and country, God first and then country, and that the two are not in conflict. The United States of America has been largely, and it is on the whole that you have to judge these things, a force for good in the world, a force for civilization. And as Richard Nixon said it during the middle of the Cold War, the only reason that anyone goes to bed anywhere in the world tonight with any modicum of freedom or dignity is because of the armed might of the United States and its willingness to use it on behalf of its neighbors and friends.
You must regret the fact that many committed Christians don't bother to vote.
Oh, I think it's a sin. I mean, based on Romans 13, it's a sin. Romans 13 says God ordained the civil magistrate and that we are to be supportive of the civil magistrate for conscience sake. That means, at the very least, we pay our taxes and we vote. That's just the beginning of our obligation.
What in the world is the excuse for not doing so?
Well, I think, first of all, there's a deep pietistic streak in American Christianity. It's always been there, of just sort of withdrawing from the world, which I think is a wrong view. But it's a very deeply held view that we should just withdraw from the world, not have anything to do with it, and just sort of go into a holding pattern until it's time to go home and be with Jesus, which is, it seems to me, ignores the command to be salt and light. And then secondly, I think people are lazy. And third, I've had people tell me this, I don't want to get called for jury duty because they get the jurors list from the voting rolls. And then they complain about lousy jury verdicts.
Oh.
Really?
About
that's
selfish.
Been an answer people have given?
I've had people give me that answer. I don't want to get called for jury duty.
Again, that's...
And I said, listen, you're not going to get picked anyway. I mean, I've been called five times, and both the defense and the prosecution are fighting over who's going to throw me off first.
I have never been chosen either.
No, they don't want people like us. Trust me.
This book comes out in paperback in January.
Yes, sir.
And it's called The Divided States of America, and it is published by...
Thomas Nelson.
Dr. Richard Land, thanks for being with us again today.
Well, thank
you. It's fun talking to you. All I have to do is just, you know, drop a couple of little words to you and you'll take it and run with it.
Well, when my oldest daughter was six, she asked her mother a question. And her mother said, well, honey, you need to ask your daddy. And she put her little hands on her hips and she said, Mama, I didn't want to know that much about it. Out of the mouths of babes.
Well, you're flying home. Thanks for coming to be with us, and let's
Thank
do
you.
It again.
Thank you.
Okay.
And we'll have links at myfamilytalk.com to more information about the upcoming re-release of Dr. Land's book, including some information on his radio programs. Again, myfamilytalk.com.
And if you'd like to get a copy of this two-day discussion we've had with Dr. Land, perhaps you know someone who likes to stay on top of public policy issues, you can call us for that. Our number is 877-732-6825.
And Ryan, here at the end of November, I should mention, as people are preparing their own Christmas card lists, if listeners would like to receive Dr. and Mrs. Dobson's annual Christmas card with their family picture, all you have to do is call us and ask to be added to Dr. Dobson's Christmas card list. Ryan, I imagine you're on that.
I am, but if I wasn't, so. I'd be calling. Once again, that number is 877-732-6825.
And make plans now to be with us next time when we'll take on a very serious topic, women and emotional infidelity. It's an important discussion with author and speaker Julie Barnhill that no woman should miss. Join us next time.